Hello, and welcome to Living with Dying, the podcast where we try to break the taboos around death and dying and learn to talk about it. Thank you if you've been listening since the beginning, and if you have, you'll know we've covered so many aspects of death and dying, from what it's actually like to die, to how it feels to lose your nearest and dearest, the different ways grief can strike, the different ways we cope or don't with loss, how counselling can help, what part faith can play, how to help others going through grief, and how to pick up the pieces and rebuild a life after a big loss. I'm delighted today to be joined by Fernanda Reyes, who's established a website called Evermore for people who've been bereaved, who've lost loved ones. And as is so often the case, I think you started this, didn't you, Fernanda, because of a sad loss of your own. Would you like to start by telling us a bit about that?
Yes, exactly. You're exactly right. I started Evermore because of my learnings from my dad's death. And my dad passed away from idiopathic lung fibrosis. And throughout his decline, I got to realize that there were a lot of conversations to be had about death. Some of them we had in terms of practical things regarding what to do if, let's say, if he needed oxygen, like further oxygen or like get intubated, and what were his wishes. He said he didn't want to get intubated if that was going to be the case. One of the things that we didn't talk too much about, it because I think it was quite painful for both of us, was about, like the emotional side of coming to terms with him dying. And we spoke a little bit about this before, but it was more around the angle of I, as a daughter, didn't want him to feel that I was giving up on him. And him, he was strong when he was in front of me, and sometimes he was frustrated and everything, but he always kept having his medicines, going to the doctor, even though I think we both knew that it wasn't working anymore. But I feel like he didn't want to show to me that he was giving up. And so then eventually my dad died, and there was a lot of self-reflection. I went through like a self-reflection process. I guess it was grief, but I did experience, which I got to learn afterwards, anticipatory grief. So I think by the time that he passed, it was tough, but I was already quite in the process of grieving, because I've been going through this deteriorating whilst he was deteriorating. So Evermore was created based on my self-reflection journey once my dad died. And it was a mix of creative thinking as well, because I do work in the digital space, let's say. So I spotted, maybe it's not a problem, but yes, it's like a taboo subject, as you may know. So how can we help people to have those difficult conversations before they die? Like during that process, so we can alleviate a little bit the future once that person or like whoever is like dies. How can we make it better for the ones that stay and actually for the ones that die as well? So Evermore was born through that process. And that's Evermore.
It's a lovely name, Evermore, because it just reminds you, doesn't it, of the fact that even our lost loved ones, they are still around us. They live in our hearts and our heads. And
yes, exactly, right?
Day.
And that's the essence of Evermore, to think, okay, if we have these really nice conversations and we really get to connect, obviously we'll connect because it's our loved ones, but it's more to understand really the essence of what made them themselves or what do they want us to know about them. And just having that thought of like, they will always be with us. So for example, I don't know if if I, the moment where I have kids, what would my dad would have wanted me to know? Like, what would be his dad, that advice, let's say? So we didn't get to have those conversations. I didn't get to ask him those things, and I wish I did. And now it's that feeling of, yeah, of a bit of regret that I should have had those conversations. And I want to help people not to feel that way. Oh, we will always have some regrets, but let's try to minimize them if possible.
But I can so empathize with what you're saying, because I think those last few weeks in somebody's life are so delicate, aren't they? And it's so difficult to know how much they want to know, how much you should be talking to them about what's up and coming. And you don't want to tempt fate. You don't want to make it sound as if you know they're going to die. If they don't think they're going to die, it's very, very hard.
It is difficult, right? Because I also did wonder whether he knew he was dying, because he was a doctor, so he was pretty familiar with the process of dying. But we never really talked that openly, or he'd never really, well, he sat down and told me, look, I don't have much time, but there are a few things I would want you to know. But it was never, apart from that, sounds very explicit, but I feel we could have talked even more about it. So
is the website designed to help people way before, like people when they're young talking to their parents and all that kind of thing?
Well, that is the long-term vision. So I would want to get to a place where everyone uses it to facilitate these conversations, to educate people around how to talk about death, what are the things that are important to know from a practical perspective, but also from an emotional perspective. But to start, I want to start with people that are already thinking about the process, just because it is a difficult topic, it's a taboo topic, and we need to start small with the people that are already in that mindset. So at the moment, the way it is designed, it is for patients or people that are on a terminal diagnosis and their loved ones. So there's like two profiles, depending on which of those you are. And the service is tailored based on that, on those profiles. So it's kind of a bridge between them. If you think about Evermore, actually one of the things Evermore is like, yeah, they will always be around. But if you look at the logo, and actually there's a little bridge. So it's kind of that connection between a loved one and a person who might be near death.
So can you describe, take us through what each one of those can do? Let's start with what a loved one, what sort of things can they do on the website?
So a loved one, for example, let's say, I'll put my example. Let's say my dad was diagnosed with a terminal illness. So I could go to the website, to the digital platform, and understand how I feel about his diagnosis first. So it's like that self-reflection, and get to terms with what are the things that worry me, scare me, potentially things that I'm not ready to talk about. But it's just starting to plant that seed of there are things that are coming. But also, I get my thoughts in order. Now, how can I support my loved one, my dad, to go through his diagnosis? What are the things that actually scare him? He's worried about, what are they thinking about, like health directives, health wishes? So start facilitating that journey. Now, I understand that maybe not everyone would be ready to, because it takes a lot of like self-awareness to even go to that process. So there will, at the moment, there is nothing like that yet, but there will potentially be like a triage that we're in discussions about that. Maybe I'm not ready to talk about it. So you might be triaged to potentially like a psychologist if you feel like this is quite distressing, or like a counselor. Potentially an end-of-life doula as well, because an end-of-life doula can help both a loved one or a person that is in that journey of like dying. So you can do that.
Can I just interrupt for a second, just to make sure I understand, for clarity? Are you guided on this journey by what you see on the digital platform? Is it questions that take you forward?
Yes, exactly. It's like a conversational. It's not, let's say, a chatbot, or it's not nothing AI related. It's more a conversation based on psychological, let's say, prompts that I've designed myself, just because I am in that area of, I'm not a psychologist, but my area of work is user research, so it's like user-centric design, and it's based in psychology, behavioral science, and so on. So I'm trying to, help people have those conversations with a very thoughtful approach to help them move a little bit to that more, maybe acceptance of what's happening, but also, like that awareness that you don't want to have regrets, or I'm not saying I'm going to cure anyone's grief, because that's impossible, but I want to alleviate it. Just, when someone dies and be like, okay, I did everything I could have done, and that's how I want to remember this experience. But also, if now talking about the other side, let's say the person that is dying, I also want them to feel that they have closure, and it's as a chapter that it's ending, and they have that calmness, and they can go in peace. So it's different features, let's say, different things that they can do. That's kind of like the understanding a diagnosis element, talking to an end of life doula, and that's already available. There's also something that I call a farewell planner, which is not really planning your funeral as in like in the details of who is going to be the provider, what color of, I don't know, I forgot the name, the color of the
coffin.
The coffin, yes. Thank you. It's more about the emotional aspects of how would you like to say goodbye. And I think when my dad died, he did do the practical bit about paying for his funeral, so I knew exactly where would it be, but I didn't know the details of how would he want us to feel, or what was the atmosphere that he wanted to create. And then it happens in Mexico, which is where I'm from, but I'm in London. The funeral happens the next day. So then someone just died, then you need to get ready for the funeral. So everything is happening very quickly. And I remember my auntie gave me my dad's suit to dress him with that. Like she just found something. But it was not something that maybe he wanted to wear. We don't know, right? We just don't know. And they were asking us when we were in at the funeral place, should we do a mass? Should we not do a mass? And then in my head, it's like, well, he's slightly religious. Well, he's religious, but maybe he wouldn't want the full-on mass. But there's different points of view as well when there is not something very like set in stone of what you would want. So anyway, we ended up having a very, let's say, quiet funeral and quite religious. And but I was thinking, my dad was like a very lively person, and he liked to party and to be surrounded by friends and laughing. And I was like, I was thinking he would want something like that. I don't think he would want us to be like all sad and quiet, which was a bit like that. So that was one thing. And I'll explain why the farewell planner, because it's based on my experience. So that was one element of the experience. But the second part of it was when they took his body after 24 hours. So the next day, there was a mass, and then they took his body. And a few hours later, they gave us the ashes. And when that happened, I don't remember the order correctly, because it was quite blurry as well with everything going on. But there was a funeral director reading a poem. And I remember I felt so touched by the words of that poem. And I was like, wow, in my head, I was like, my dad really wanted me to hear these words. And I feel like he's talking to me. and that's so thoughtful of him. And then the funeral director finished his ceremony, let's say, and I went and approached him, and I was like, oh, just wanted to ask, when did you receive this poem? And he's like, oh, we read it to everyone. It's the same poem that we share it to everyone. I was like, oh. And one part of me was a bit like, yeah, a bit heartbroken. I was like, oh, well, it's not that I'm not annoyed at my dad for not picking a poem, but it was kind of like having the last words from him that I thought he would have picked. So from Evermore, the farewell planner was created with that intention of, okay, we know that we want to understand whether you want a funeral or like a memorial, because some people might not want a funeral. A funeral is where the body is present. Memorial is when the body's not there. Some people like leaving funerals, so they want to be surrounded. They want to be present in the funeral, but like, yeah, they're not dead yet. So it's kind of like facilitating those conversations, but also thinking, how do I want people to feel? And do I want to leave some words behind? What is the atmosphere that I want to create for them? And this farewell planner is, again, for either for a loved one to help the other person to think about it, or for the dying person to plan it by themselves. And yeah, the intention is to really be quite thoughtful about what do we want to leave behind. Sometimes I put myself in that position. When I die, I don't want people just like sitting in quiet. I know it will be sad, but the last thing I want them is to feel super sad. So like, how can I help them to remember me in a very nice and caring way? And yes, I'm not here, but that's like the nature of life. So let me plan something for you. It's kind of like a nice little goodbye gift. So that's the essence of that farewell planner in Evermore as well. And yeah, and we have other thoughts in the pipeline for whatever more will become. So yeah, quite exciting.
I appreciate so much what you say about trying to personalize it, because I can remember many years ago now, I went to the funeral of an elderly aunt way out in the country somewhere here in the UK. And the person who was conducting the funeral did not know, or got wrong anyway, the name of my aunt.
That was
an example of funerals being like on a production line, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, and that was a horrendous experience for me to realise that this poor woman at her own funeral hadn't even had her name said correctly.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, one of the questions about the farewell planner is like, would you like someone to speak? And obviously, if they are okay with it at that moment, because we know it's an emotional moment, you might not feel. I remember every single time I wanted to talk, I had like a knot in my throat. But I wanted to say something. But then I just was like, can't. But now I wish I did. But I didn't really think about it. So yeah, it's kind of being a bit proactive with this, thinking the same way we prepare for birth. Like, let's not shy away from it. It's a difficult moment. But we can also be proactive about it. And I'm sure there's a lot of benefits. There's a lot of stories, actually, that, yeah, being more proactive and mindful towards our death's acceptance and others that's accepting others, everyone that you love is going to die, actually does have great benefits psychologically. It will help you live more purposeful. And sometimes, I remember for me, and I'm assuming it has happened to you as well, like there were so many little things that annoyed me on my day-to-day, let's say at work. And after I lost someone so close to me, I was like, nothing like that, like this really matters in the grand scheme of things. So even though it has been a really tough time, in a way, I'm actually quite grateful for it as well, because it has made me grow a lot as a person. I'm not like really young, but at the same time, I feel I'm quite young to have lost someone like a parent. I felt a bit alone because none of my friends have lost their parents either. So it was quite tough.
So I know you've gone on to become an end-of-life doula, haven't you? And I want to talk to you about that in a moment. But just to sum up about Evermore, it seems to me to be like a hand-holding
thing. Yes, yes, exactly. It's kind of a companion, let's say. I don't want to say that I want to replace personal relations, but actually it's a companion that will help you connect. So that is what I want from Evermore.
Tell me the website so people can find you.
Yeah, sure. It's joinevermore.com. We are also on Instagram, joinevermore Instagram, and we are on Facebook as well, joinevermore.
And so now tell me more about being an end-of-life doula. Did that happen to you because of your experience over your dad's death?
Yes. Once my dad died, it was just like a series of changes. Then I was made redundant from work maybe a month after.
Oh, dear.
I was actually, oh, yeah, no worries. I understand. Because I was like, for me, like, I'm just going to find another job and it's fine. Like, there's really nothing that is going to really be more impactful, like, into my emotions than my dad's death. Like, I was, I think, off for 3 months. In between jobs, and it was great because I took a lot of time to do a lot of research, reading, and I understood. I wish I knew actually that end-of-life doulas existed before, but I didn't. So then I was like, this is exactly what I want to be. I want to learn how, because for to be an end-of-life doula, you first need to be comfortable yourself with one, your own mortality. So I was like, I want to get there. And second, then you need to be open enough, like, again, like spiritually, like people have different religions and people have different preferences based on many different factors, not just religion. I think I did it quite selfishly. I wanted to be prepared myself, but also I wanted to be ready to help others. It's not that I made mistakes, let's say, with my dad, but I wanted to, be more thoughtful for the next friend, family member. So I decided to enroll on an end-of-life doula course. And actually, it was life-changing. So I dedicated a few months on Saturdays, apart from my day-to-day work, to train to be an end-of-life doula. Now I'm part of a community in London. So we have like some meetups. It's nice. I haven't managed to get the time to practice it with clients, let's say. It's more like people around me, which I'm helping. But I haven't really offered my services, let's say, as to the world.
But tell me what it actually involves. If you were to work with a patient, let's say, what do you do for them?
The motto of an end-of-life doula is help a person, whether, say, it's a loved one or the person dying, go through that journey of the end of life. So that journey will vary depending on the person, because there's a lot of elements to think about like the acceptance. So there might be people that they haven't accepted that they are about to die, but maybe their loved ones have. So it's like they might hire you to be like, okay, my dad doesn't accept that they're dying, but please help him. Or there's someone that is more conscious that is just wants to get, for example, their affairs in order. So please help me understand what are my health wishes and everything. So the motto of like an end-of-life doula is to meet the person where they at. So the journey could be like the start was like, I'm ready, I'm super prepared for everything, so help me just action things, to I don't know where to start, I'm overwhelmed, I'm scared of dying. So it depends on cases, but a doula will help you emotionally. So thinking about those conversations, how do you feel about your mortality, someone else's mortality, physically. There will be times that you might hire a doula to help you, a bit like a carer, to help you with those elements, potentially mobility and things like that. But also spiritually, so even though you may not be had the same beliefs, you are there to help them understand which elements of their beliefs are important to them and how can they, those elements could remain along the way, along that journey, or have like the community. Because when you are dying, it might be quite isolating as well. So it's like, okay, if you, let's say you used to go to church a lot and you had your community, but now you can't go and you have lost that sense. It's like, okay, how can we create a space where you could still have that community? So it's facilitating, again, those conversations or actions to help the person that is dying or their loved ones to feel supported and, I think, a little bit in control, even though there's these things are out of your control, but yeah, help them with a bit more structure.
And is your job also to explain to both parties, the dying and the relations, what's involved in dying and what it's likely to be like?
Yes, exactly. So it will be around as well potential changes on the, let's say, the skin, the body, also whether you, for example, if you, when you died, would you want to like be washed by your family or things like thinking about actually like what's going to happen to your body once you die and what would you want to do with it? So yeah, it's helping them explain the process of dying, which it was really interesting to learn about it. And now looking back, I'm like, wow, I noticed all of these things on my dad. And I was so blind in some things because I saw them, but I either didn't want to see that they were happening to him or didn't know about them. But yeah, it was something actually in one of the conversations we had in the training, they said like the skin becomes waxy when you're close to the end. And I remember telling my dad, like, oh, like your skin looks amazing. Like, because it's quite tight. And I was like, oh, you look really handsome. Why didn't you take care of your skin like this before? And then actually now looking back, I'm like, oh, wow. Like he actually was very close to dying. And I just was thinking, I don't know, there was something magical happening to him. And I guess it's quite magical still in a way, but yeah.
But you're so right, because there are so many signs we could look out for if we only knew, aren't there?
Yes, and, yeah, exactly.
I mean, elderly people sleep a lot more, I gather, now when they get near the end of life, but I didn't know that.
Yeah, same. My dad was sleeping all the time and I would go and wake him up because I was like, then you're not going to go and sleep in the night. But yes, if I only knew better, like I would have just maybe even one be more relaxed as well about it. I mean, I was not like forcing him to eat, but I was like, please eat. You need like strength and you need to get better. And he was like, I'm not hungry. But yeah, you know that they don't need food towards the end.
You've been on a huge learning curve, haven't you? I'm full of admiration for you, for one so young to have come so far.
You. Thanks. I'm not that young, but you're
when you look it.
I am 31, almost 32, so I'm like, yeah, quite old in a way, but not what I want to express is that I don't want people to think that I'm super young and I lost someone when I was, I don't know, 14. I know I don't look 14. But I want them to understand that I respect as well people that have lost someone much younger than me. And I have said it before, like even though this has been transformational for me, I know I'm not the only one. And now like we all are gonna lose someone, have lost someone. I don't know if you know of Irvin Yalom. He is a psychotherapist, a psychiatrist, psychotherapist, but he writes amazing books. There's one called Staring at the Sun, which is about coming to terms with your mortality. So I would recommend anyone to read that book. He talks there about the ripple effect, about how sometimes these experiences make you want to help others, and then you create a ripple. He does say as well that sometimes could be part of us wanting to be immortal in a way.
That's a lovely picture to leave us with. Fernanda, thank you so much for talking to me, and it's Join Evermore, and I wish you every success with it.
Thank you so much. The conversation was really, really pleasant. Thank you.
Lovely to meet you.
Death is never easy, but there are ways we can help each other through it. And if you've found any of these episodes helpful, please think about liking and sharing. And if you can help spread the word by telling just one other person, thank you. And a huge thanks to Joe Barrett, without whom these podcasts would simply not be possible. You can contact us on hello@livingwithdying.co.uk.